The hair on the back of their necks sticks up, and there is a great temptation to start off at a run because the imagination lowers the vibrations so that one is susceptible to impressions from the lower astral of disembodied spirits, bodies in coffins and all the rest of it, and we think that such things could happen to us. We think that a ghost is going to come out and bite us behind, or something. Well, we think about that and we fail to be rational about it, and so the fear grows and grows. In other words, the vibrations become lower and lower and we become gloomier and gloomier. Fear is nothing but uncontrolled imagination. If you want to overcome fear, just be certain that nothing is going to hurt you. Nothing can hurt you. Tell yourself that you are an immortal soul, and although it is possible for someone to temporarily damage your clothes or your body, that will not hurt the essential you. The less you fear fear, the less you will have fear, so that in the end you can discipline yourself so much that fear does not exist, cannot exist, in your makeup. Then you will know contentment and satisfaction. Then you will walk with your head up and your shoulders back, unless you live in a wheelchair. Now, listen to this. You have described how drugs can do great harm to one's spirituality. Can such damage be repaired within a lifetime? You say, also, that one should never take drugs. But surely you will agree that many people have secured out-of-the-body experiences by the use of drugs, have secured spiritual enlightenment through the use of drugs. I believe you are wrong when you say that drugs are harmful. What do you say about that? 74 Yes, Mom, I do say that drugs are wrong. I do say that drugs are the work of the devil himself, because if you take drugs, then you are altering your vibrations artificially and you are making it almost impossible, I said almost, to develop spiritually without the aid of such props. Drugs are terrible things indeed, and they definitely stain your astral body and impair your physical body. Do you believe that athletes should be given drugs to make them run faster or jump higher? Do you believe that people should take benzedrine tablets to keep them going longer? If you do, you should read some of the police reports. For an illustration, I will tell you about long-distance truck drivers. These men drive vast distances every day and, naturally, they get tired. So many of them have been in the habit of taking drugs or, as they term them, goofballs, and police records and insurance statistics quite irrefutably prove that the use of these drugs causes accidents, death, and mental impairment. Now, if drug firms could do so with safety, they would sell all manner of drugs. They are in the business to make money, but it is stupid to go on selling stuff like LSD, goofballs, and the like, and then find that they are injuring the health of so many people. I say that drugs should be quite definitely banned. But those who have taken drugs, what hope have they? They have every hope, provided they most rigidly abstain from taking drugs anymore, provided they eat sensibly and drink sensibly, and provided they do not go in for too many forms of abuse, self-abuse, that is. No one is beyond the pale. Everyone can be helped if they want to be helped. So if any of you who are drug addicts really want to kick the habit, then you can kick the habit, and by the time you get to the other side, you will find that your astral form has recovered from the psychic shock of your physical drug addiction. I do want to say something here about suicide, because of late I have been shocked at the number of people who have written to me saying that they have been on drugs and they see no way out except to commit suicide. Well, my goodness me. Suicide is very, very wrong indeed. You harm yourself, and you have to come back to much worse conditions if you commit suicide. If you have difficulties which make you think 75 about suicide, then talk over the matter with a priest, or even with the Salvation Army, or look in the telephone directory and find some association or society connected with welfare with whom you can discuss your problems. So let me emphasize, as I have emphasized so often in the past, never contemplate suicide. Never commit suicide. You are hurting yourself if you do. If you commit suicide, well, you have abandoned help. If you stay alive, there is always some way out of your problem. Suicide is not a way out because, I repeat, you come back to harder conditions. Now another question. How is it that some people come to one sign of the zodiac and some to another sign? If we come as a Taurus person, how can we appreciate the problems of a Cancer person or a Leo person or a Scorpio person, or something else? I don't understand this problem about how we come under different signs of the zodiac. Will you tell us?
Yes, I can tell you. Every person goes through every sign of the zodiac, and there are 12 signs. And every person has to live through each quadrant of the zodiac. So you can be just entering the sign of Libra in one life, then in another life, not necessarily the next, you can be right midway in the sign of Libra, and in yet another life you can be just leaving the sign of Libra, or, of course, all the other signs of the zodiac. So you have to live through every sign and every part of the sign so that you get full experience of each of the signs.
Question: tell us about the future. Are we in the West all going to be in for it, or will things suddenly brighten for us? Tell us, will you?
I've just bought a place up in the Rockies in Washington State. I am having a house built there, and I am hoping to be free of all troubles.
Will I be?
Well, we have to remember that everything comes in cycles. Imagine that you are watching a great big pendulum. The pendulum is at the top of its stroke. Let us say you are facing this pendulum and it is up at the top of its stroke on the right hand side. Then you release it, and it moves down and eventually it reaches its lowest point, and then it rises to go up to its highest point. Then it reverses and comes down to the lowest point, and up again.
Life, existence, is like that. You get a golden age and then people are too self-satisfied, so things get
76. Worse and worse, things get lower and lower, just like the pendulum on its downward swing. And then, when it is nearly at the bottom of its swing, you get the negation of all liberties, you get communism when people get horribly sick of being dictated to. After that they strive again for freedom, and so, just as the pendulum moved to the upward stroke, people strive for more spirituality and they work hard at it, they put aside their petty bickering, they put aside their fighting, conditions improve. Eventually life becomes quite pleasant, then it becomes exceedingly good, better and better. And so we come again to a golden age, an age in which people get complacent, too self-satisfied, too content. So they sit back, they've got everything, there is nothing more to work for. And then the pendulum starts on its downward swing again, and so people find hardship coming. They find communism comes again, and so we get the same thing cycle after cycle. Now upon this earth we are having a hard time. The pendulum is still going down, and it has to go down still further before it can go higher, but cheer up, the communism the world will know will not be so severe as that which initiated that evil cult or policy into this world, because each time conditions get a little better. So, we are approaching the darkest hour before the dawn, but after the darkest hour shafts of light will shine across the sky, the gloom will end, the day will dawn, and again we shall come to the golden age. But at the end of the day the night will one fall again, to be followed by gloom and a darkness, until again dawn will burst upon the world and life will become brighter and brighter, until, with increasing complacency and self-satisfaction, conditions will deteriorate. And so until the end of time the earth and all worlds have these cycles of good and bad, and good and bad. So be of good cheer, because no one is ever alone or deserted. There is always hope, so keep that in mind. You can be as good as you want to be. You can be helped at any time if you really want to be.
77. Chapter 5. It was becoming difficult to go out in the grounds or to drive along the plaza in the wheelchair. Curtains would twitch slightly at my passing, and perhaps just one eye would show as an inquisitive person followed my transit. Whispers came, "Yes, that's him all right, that's him." Others, more forthright, came out in the open and said they had heard about me on French television or they had read about me in the French language papers. Some went so far as to say that there seemed to be quite a conspiracy to do whatever harm they could. The number of visitors who were just taking snapshots increased.
It was noticeable that they all managed to aim the camera in my direction. On one occasion, I was riding along in my wheelchair by the side of the road, and a car came rushing out of the distance and slowed up with a screech of brakes beside me. The driver drove along at my speed and, highly dangerously, he used a sign camera to film me at the same time as he was trying to drive his car on a public road. There came the time when the whispers and the irritations became insupportable, so we discussed matters and I said, "Oh, let's get this Mr. Tilly in then, but I will tell you what I am going to do. I have had so much double-crossing from people, not only the press but from all manner of people, that I think I will use a tape recorder and record what is said so that afterwards, if there should be any dispute, well, then I shall have evidence to prove what happened free from defective memories, free from what I may gently call reporter's license." Within a very few days, there came a rush and a roar, some 78 thing like a modern jet plane taking on or a space capsule or something, and the very fast modern car belonging to Mr. Tilly swooshed up the road, violently turned right, and swung down to the entrance many floors below. Minutes later there came hurrying footsteps and almost a skid stop followed by pounding at the door. Mr. Tilly entered. Of course it must be very clearly understood that Mr. Tilly is not his real name. His real name doesn't matter, it has nothing to do with this book, but I thought that as television and newspaper, radio and all that were much the same sort of racket, I would invent a generic term. This must be made clear, because in the past I have really, truly, honestly, seriously had people write to me and ask me about Mrs. Hensbaum and Rosie Hips, and people like that, not realizing that I was just using made-up names. Well, Mr. Tilly came in. We had a few friendly words of greeting and then he told me that he'd got a whole list of questions, and I said, "Well, look, I am a very sick man indeed and I do not know that I can stand all the time and hardship or many hours of interview, so what I suggest is this: you give me all your questions and I will answer some of them here and now, and I will answer the others in writing." Mr. Tilly nodded wisely and produced wads of paper from his pocket. Some had pretty doodles on them, for he was a great doodler. And then he put the questions on the bed before him. "Before we start," I said, "I do want you to understand clearly, Mr. Tilly, that in this material I retain my copyright, because I propose to use all this material in a book which I am going to write for the English language. You do understand that, don't you?" Mr. Tilly looked a bit sour, and said, "Oh well, how am I going to manage then if it is your copyright? I cannot use the material myself, can I?" "Well, yes, you can, Mr. Tilly," I said, "for I am telling you that you can use all this material in the French book which I understand you are going to write, and I will use it in the English book, so then we shall not conflict with what we are going to do, shall we?" 79. Mrs. Ramper, who was listening intently, nodded sagely, and then Mr. Tilly said, "Oh well, that's all right then. Now then," I said, "this picture you brought from that French language paper, well, it makes me rather sorry that I am not more proficient in French. It's interesting that these fellows label me as a gentle fake. Actually, I am neither gentle nor a fake, but surely their comments are some sort of a compliment, because there is so little gentleness in the world today. It seems that Jews and Arabs are knocking the stuffing out of each other, and Christians are trying to see what is inside the other fellow, and bombs are being tossed about in Montreal, and the press and television are being savage to anyone. Yes, I suppose it is quite a compliment to be labeled gentle, even if it is in the connotation of fake. But, you know, this just shows how inaccurate the press really is, because I have always maintained that it does not matter who writes a thing so long as the person writes stuff that is of benefit to other people, so long as he writes the truth. That is what I say it does not matter about me. It does not matter who I am, it does not matter what I am. If what I write brings some good to someone, and letters which I have proved that I do bring good to people, then my precise identity, or whether I sign my name with an A, a Y, or a Z, surely does not matter. This interview, you know, is really just pandering to the inquisitiveness of the public. You seem to think that it is a good idea, but I am not sure that I agree with you. One of the complaints I have is this: I tell the absolute truth and yet the press wriggle around taking my statements out of context, and making up something quite different which I certainly did not say and did not imply. I state that all that I have written is true. How can anyone distort that? But I have no doubt that the press will distort it somehow. Why do not the press go in for some research? Surely they have enough money for it. They could do some research into authentic cases of transmigration. Even in the Bible there are cases of transmigration, and throughout history, throughout the libraries of the world, there are many really authentic cases recorded. I must be careful when I say really authentic because of 80. Why some moronic press man will say, oh, he uses really, therefore he is implying he is not genuine. But that is not so at all. I state that I have experienced definite, authentic transmigration. Now you ask about this plumber business. Well, what is wrong with being a plumber? I am sure you have found the services of a plumber extremely useful at times. In fact, at times the services of a plumber can be a darn sight more beneficial to you than the services of a pressman. You get locked in the smallest room, for instance, and it takes more than a pressman to get one out. However, whether you believe it or not, and I couldn't care less, no, I have never been a plumber. If I had, I would be far richer than I am at present, because I believe that plumbers are extremely well paid. Certainly they charge enough. I have just said about you being locked in the smallest room, but there is one report which I had repeated to me some time ago which gave me very considerable glee. There was a pressman with a very bad character, one who persecuted me without mercy, and he went aboard a ship to do some interviewing and he was not at all wanted. He was not popular even with his fellow reporters, and if anyone is unpopular with a fellow reporter then he must be a pretty crummy specimen indeed. But, anyway, this reporter had to go to the you-know-where, and while he was in that very small space some of his associates barricaded the door preventing him from coming out. Consequently he missed the interview altogether, and that was a good thing because he was not a good writer nor did he know the meaning of truth. But then, this could apply to all pressmen, couldn't it? Returning to this plumber business, no, I do not know anything about it because, as I have stated, my story is a true story and the pages in the Ramper story will give you as much as I know about this past life. Look at it like this: you go to a cinema show and you see a film which, for some extraordinary reason, is being run backwards, that is, the film runs from now to then. Well, you become confused. Your sense of time is altered because everything is reversed. But you try to remember a film you saw, oh, what shall we say, 20 years. 81. Ago? How much do you know about it now? Probably you were not all that interested, and if you wrote out exactly what happened in that film which is being run backwards, it would not necessarily tally precisely with actual events. I have a completely eidetic memory about everything which has happened to me personally. But I am not good at all at trying to portray the life story of a person whom I have never met and whom I never want to meet. What is transmigration? Well, I thought everybody knew what that was. If they don't know what it is, then they can't be very good at their religious studies, can they? Transmigration is stated to be the movement of one soul from one body into another body. There are many, many recorded instances in the world's history in which the soul of a person has departed from a body, but before death occurred to that body, another body was taken over. It is as simple as that. You can say, if you wish to make it clearer, that there is a car. The car stops and the driver gets out. Another driver gets in and drives off. The driver, in this case, can be likened to the soul. So the soul, which is the first driver, left the car which is the body, and a fresh soul, which is the second driver, got into the car and drove off. Just as you can have a car which is driven by two people, one after the other of course, so you can have a body which is occupied first by one soul and then by another. There is nothing very strange about it. Another way in which you can look at it, if it helps to make it clearer, is this. You have a storage battery, and the charge, which in this case is the soul, goes out of it with use, so then it is charged up again and, in effect, the same battery gets a different soul. The difficulty is that here in this western part of the world people are more interested in making money and in harming their neighbors, but in the eastern part of the world there is a completely different concept of the purpose of living. In the Far East people are more interested in the spiritual side of life, things of the spirit have greater value than the things of the flesh. But you are still on about this plumber business and how it 82. Started. Well, in England there are many snobs, we must add MIT that, and if a person is a plumber or a garbage collector then he is considered to be pretty low and not to have any education, and is supposed to touch a greasy forelock and say, yes, God, no, God, to the customers who do not pay their bills. So the best way to pull a man down in England is to say, oh, he's the son of a plumber, or he is a plumber himself, which, I gather, is considered to be even worse. I cannot help smiling, though, when I think that the founder of the Christian religion was a carpenter, which is no higher than being a plumber. I have been reminded of a case which illustrates this very well. Lord Hambledon is an important and cultured man, but there was someone talking about him in a disparaging manner, and remarked, oh, that fellow Smith who sells books. That, however, still does not affect the true status of Lord Hambledon, whose name is also Smith and who is, after all, England's biggest and perhaps most important bookseller. This is the age of Kali, the age of disruption, where the crummy little man in the street and his snotty-nosed wife, done up with loads of powder and face glue, try to pull down all that really matters, try to sneer at tradition, try to sneer at culture, and have no time for education because through television and the press people are very superficially educated above their means and above their brains. They hear fantastic tales about Hollywood homes, and they get communist ideas that they too should have such homes, homes which really exist only in the fevered imagination of the film people. The worst aspect of our present civilization is how a very noisy minority can make it appear that a person is a fraud or a person is hated, etc. We get the same thing in strikes. We get a few hooters rousing the general people to an absolute frenzy. We get strong-arm goons who beat a person senseless if he tries to stand on the side of decency. And so the average person who would like to know the truth is driven by fear to listen to the rabble and the goons and the press. But you tell me something, if a man has a big firm, or if he supervises, does he necessarily have to be classed as the lowest of the lot? For instance, if a man owns a newspaper, does he 83. Have to be just the copy devil or whatever you call the fellow nowadays? Or if a man has a great big home appliance firm, does he count as a pipe fitter or a plumber, or is he the head of the firm? It is a terrible thing nowadays how people are so unutterably snobbish. What was Moses? Surely Moses was a waif, a homeless child who was just picked up somewhere. And what was Jesus? The son of a carpenter, we are told. And Northern Ireland trying to destroy all the other Christians here again. As I said previously, that is an even older trade than that of a plumber. To bring it back to our present era, the press have also started a good thing in their own mind by bringing down royalty. Do they not refer so frequently to Princess Margaret as Mrs. Jones? Do they not refer to that very great man, Prince Philip, as just a foreigner who managed to get adopted into the British Navy or something? Strange, isn't it? And so why should we not call the editor of a newspaper a rag picker? After all, he does have a rag, does he not? Again, I am going to state that all my books are true, and I am going to tell you that I have a very special reason for insisting on this truth. I will even tell you why I so insist. Transmigration is fact, not fantasy, and there will be many others like me coming to this world. If I can save any of those from the misery and hell and persecution which I have endured through hatred here, then my own suffering will have been more than justified. People who have accomplished transmigration, and have talked about it, have been regarded as something strange. Some have been put in mental homes. But if a person appears strange to another person, he is feared, and if he is feared, he is also hated. Have you ever seen a dog approaching a strange dog? Have you seen how it circles around, sniffing and growling, and is always afraid it is going to lose something? Well, that is how humans behave with me because they consider that I am different in some way, and so they try to claim that I am a fraud. They try to claim that because I am so strange I must be a fake. I am not, you know. I am one alone at present, the lonely man, but there will be others coming by transmigration, and they will carry on where I have to leave off through ill health and poverty, both caused by persecution. 84. People persecute and fear that which they don't understand. People hate those who take them into realms which they have not before entered. People loathe those who write about matters beyond the limited experiences of the reader. People try to destroy that which does not conform to their own concepts and patterns, as witness the assorted Christians in whose concepts may be microscopically different. As witness the American whites trying to enslave or destroy the American coloreds because they do not conform to the white pattern. The path of the bringer of truth is hard. Only the sadist and the pornographer is lauded and loaded with gold. No matter the consequences, all my books are true. My wife has been approached by pressmen who wanted her to write something sensational, something that the public could lap up. It did not have to be true. If it was the truth, so they said, it would not be sensational, it would be just the truth. But one man offered her quite a considerable sum of money to deny everything that I claim and to make out all sorts of strange things. He wanted sex orgies, he wanted underground temples, and obscene rites. Naturally, my wife refused. But it shows that there is a little segment of the press out to falsify the truth. They cannot bear the truth, it has no interest for them. There has been an astonishing interest in my sex life. Now, I can answer that easily, that is very, very simple to answer. I do not have a sex life, I live as a hermit. One could say, and it has been said too often, that I live as a lodger in my own home, but there is no trouble with morality here. Each of us has respect for the others, and, you know, we are not all sex-mad perverts. We leave it for others. Oh yes, I must tell you this, this should make you laugh. I had one communication from a lady, a French-Canadian of course, who stated with great triumph that she knew I was a fake because I looked at my cats with love when she saw me on a filmed program. Love my little cats? Of course I do. I really, genuinely love both these little people. I love all cats, but I do not always extend that love to humans. Now a word straight from the horse's mouth, or am I just a 85. Donkey instead, for being lured into this? But anyway, here is a word straight from my mouth. It really astounds me how press people drum up a lot of criticism when they have not even read my books. Now if somebody wants to criticize my books, and if they know something about the subject, why do they not read the books first? Probably because they will find that there is nothing they can criticize after. However, there it is. Yes. You can put all this into print if you want to, I would agree to it. But only if you include this sentence, I.T. Lobsang Rampa, state definitely that all my books are true and I am whom I claim to be, and I state that others will come by transmigration. I hope they will get a better welcome than I did. Oh, good gracious, I thought we had finished all these foolish questions. But if, as you say, it is so vitally important to answer them, what are they? Critics' queries? But, I don't mind critics. These people who criticize because they are ignorant and don't know anything. But come on, bring out your questions. What are they, and what is the first one? Q, people write in and say that you do not look like a Tibetan. A, oh, they do they? But how many people of any nationality look as popular imagination would have them look? Take, for example, England, a small country. Can you say that anyone is a typical Englishman? Consider a small dark Welshman, compare him with a big blonde Scotsman. Do they look alike? They are both still people of Great Britain, aren't they? Then take a person from Manchester and a person from Cornwall. They are both English, but they may be utterly, utterly different. Consider high-caste Indians. Some of them are so white-skinned that they can and do pass for Europeans.